Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we talk about Computex 2018, RGB Takeover, X399, and the Fantex Evolve X. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKay.
Dennis, it's that time of year where we celebrate your recent trip overseas for Computex.
Yes, I love Computex.
And I wanted to point out that we're going to do this episode a little bit more relaxed than we normally do on the regular show, more like an extra. In fact, I want to set the scene, Dennis, if that's okay.
Please do.
So we are sitting on the patio here at the infamous Ninja Lanes Labs. So we're outside, so you might hear a little bit of ambient noise in this episode. So let us know in the comments if you like or don't like it, because it's an experiment tonight.
It's an experiment. And the funny part about this is I have my crazy expensive broadcast microphones, and we're out on the patio instead of in the studio.
As if that's not enough, part of the reason that we're going with such a casual atmosphere is we are drinking some incredible, I'm not even going to do it justice, incredible whiskey from
Taiwan.
And if you could just tell the crew at home, the cast, the characters that are listening, what we're drinking here, because I don't think I can do it justice.
Okay, we are drinking Kavalon Sherry Cask from the Solist brand or line or whatever you want to call it. This particular one, I'm going to say, has like 20 awards that it's gotten over the years that it's been entered in various competitions. Extremely dark. Fortunately, in the States, this particular brand is very difficult to get a hold of unless you happen to fly to Taiwan, go to Elon, and go to the distillery and buy some.
One of the side effects and wonderful opportunities from taking that particular trip. And we are surrounded by all the good things. Wine, whiskey, song, women, cars, you name it, we got it. But we are here for you tonight. And so I think without further ado, we will lift a glass and talk about your trip. So Dennis, as always, we do a bit of a trip report, but I think rather than going day by day and vendor by vendor, why don't we talk a little bit about some of the things that were the overriding themes this year? And then new hardware is usually what we expect to see, video cards or motherboards, some kind of architectural change. But What really did you see?
I saw a whole lot of stuff that we had already seen before, which is no real surprise. Over the past several years, Computex has kind of slid from being this launching point for new products that we would be buying during Christmas to being more of a showcase for the stuff that's currently available. Big manufacturers like Intel, AMD, NVIDIA, they aren't launching new products because they don't really have anything to launch. They don't actually have these big, lavish sort of, well, releases right before the show starts to make the show more interesting to see the new products that all the manufacturers are going to be building to support these new architectures that are coming out. Instead, it's really kind of brand recognition. So we have big booths like this year, Zotac had a gaming arena. And the whole reason for the gaming arenas was to show off their new self-contained computer system that they are selling, which is a gaming rig, which is kind of cool. It's got a 1080 in it, I believe, and Coffee Lake CPU. It's a small form factor. It's not any bigger than our podcasting machine that I put together that we record on, which is crazy. G-Skills still had their overclocking stage and was giving away $10,000 to the winner after 5 days, which went to Dan Kopp, by the way. Congratulations.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah. Some of the other booths were really sales oriented, which is what Computex was built on, was sales. It was getting people to Taiwan to buy the equipment that was being manufactured there.
So that's a pretty critical distinction, I think, between what we see when we go to CES, which is more of a traditional trade show, and then Computex is more of a sales show. But I know you'd mentioned that there were kind of two really distinct trains of thought and how the booths were even set up. And you've kind of alluded to that with the Zoltec, but tell us more.
Well, some of it obviously was sales oriented. And these are the manufacturers that build the components. So there was manufacturers that were doing the keystones for networking. And they were building cables. They have fiber optic ones and 10 gig cables and stuff like that. It was really cool to see, but not necessarily anything that I report on here at Hardware Asylum. Other manufacturers like ASRock, ASUS, Gigabyte, well, Gigabyte wasn't on the show floor, but you get the point. They are there for brand recognition. They're for the media. there for the people that are coming by to take pictures of the showgirls just to get their brand out there. In the past, it was always the new stuff. So, like, for instance, the RGB, for instance, right?
Right.
I'm going to say it launched at Computex several years ago at the MSI booth when they were showing off the MSI Godlike.
Oh, yeah.
The first motherboard with RGB embedded.
Still one of my favorite motherboards, really. And not because of the RGB, but the full package.
It had everything. It was perfect. It had the killer stuff. It had, yeah, it was everything all together in a nice little package. And that started the whole RGB revolution in motherboards. But that was a new product launch at Computex. That was probably the last big one that I happened to see there. This year, not so much. But they still had the brand awareness that was going on. They still had the products on display. They had the new stuff that was coming out, not necessarily for gaming or overclocking, which we can talk about later. But the booth was there just to say, hey, we are still doing stuff, and this is what we have. It's kind of a combination of sales and a kind of a combination of media, where it, in the past, it was very focused on, we want people to come in to get stuff to buy from us.
Well, I want to kind of maybe expand on that a little bit, because I know that we were initially a little speculative about RGB's lasting value. And I know we talked initially even about the bling and whether or not we'd see the emergence of, you know, gold PCBs and stuff as the bling really accelerated. And because of that, I'm not going to lie, we laughed a lot about RGB before we decided that there was no escaping it and built, of course, the Carrera machine, which is embracing RGB. The RGB in general, and I know I watching from the States while you were over there because I didn't have the opportunity to travel with you, RGB seemed to be what was getting all of the headlines. I mean, everything had RGB, and we've laughed about that before, but let's talk about what was different about the RGB takeover, because I know everybody seems to have RGB now, and maybe you could allude to some of the crazy products like the cables, for example.
All right. So, yes, RGB was a theme of Computex. Every vendor, and I say every in quotes, because certain vendors don't have any consumer-level products like motherboards and video cards and stuff like that. But everybody that did have those items on display had RGB in some shape or form, either on the motherboard, on the video card, on the headsets, on the fans, on the cables. Cables is a fun one.
Yeah, it is.
You name it, it had RGB. That's not a bad thing. It's more or less just an extension on the popularity of RGB. And I want to blame China. But the funny part about it was there was one vendor there that didn't have RGB. And a lot of people pointed it out and praised them for not having RGB. And that was, and that was Noctua.
Now, that's a pretty major role reversal. And I know we're a huge Noctua fans here in the house because you know what you're getting. But it has never been a, well, glamorous part. Sorry, guys, but you know what it is by sight. It's almost the Volkswagen of fans. Dependable German engineering, right?
German engineering.
And but not necessarily gaudy or even, you know, fancy or pretty.
Well, some people call it gaudy because it's brown, but
yeah, there's that.
They super design their products to do one particular task, and it does that one task extremely well. They are designing them to the point where they released a 120 millimeter fan with a large hub so that it would flow air better and have better fan profile. But they couldn't take that design and make it larger to 140 millimeters because of the way that it was manufactured. They released the 120. The 140 is still in development, which is a completely different approach from like what Thermaltake would do. They have one design profile and here's all the fans for that same profile.
Right.
And that's the way it goes.
Now, is that because they're trying to build an ecosystem? Because I know there was, last year especially, and we saw this at CES too, everybody had, it seemed like, their own closed system. Aris, for example, had, you know, Aris infrastructure, and it all worked together. So how did that work out there? Because it seems like if you don't invest heavily into one single manufacturer, you're going to have issues.
Noctua has their own sort of ecosystem, and they kind of keep to themselves.
Right.
Everybody else had another ecosystem that they were trying to pull together, and that was really the theme. a lot of vendors had themes in that they were keeping within themselves, and they're kind of expanding. So, for instance, Gigabyte was expanding their ARS line to include SSDs and memory, something that they've never done before. Right. And that's because the PC, in terms of motherboard and video card, there's not a lot of innovation left there. So they are expanding their line to include everything that they need to have to complete an entire gigabyte computer.
Right.
It's something that EVGA has done, something that ASUS has done for a long time. But getting back to the RGB stuff, I want to talk about cables.
Let's talk about the cables, because it seems like every time we laugh about, well, you know, how far can they go? They go there. I mean, we got headphone stands, we got chairs, and now cables. Who had the cables? I got to know.
Okay, so the cables were at the Lan Li booth. I'm going to say they were treated as a like a booth attraction.
Oh, yeah, because these got a lot of press. A lot of people sent them to me and said, hey, cables.
Cables. And when I saw, because I didn't go by Lan Li, I didn't actually have a formal meeting with them. I had to see the press release myself saying, hey, they got cables. I was like, how the F can they do cables? I was thinking it was like an EL lighting shield on top of the wire,
sure,
or something like that.
Sounds right.
It sounds expensive, but sounds about right. Well, I went by, and within a couple of seconds, I realized exactly what they did. And it was a clear plastic, kind of like a fiber optic sort of situation.
Okay.
Where they had an RGB module at the end of it, and then they had individual wires. So they had, for the 24-pin module, they had 12 wires, which were this clear plastic that was transmitting the light across it. And since it was slightly opaque, it was glowing.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of sneaky, but it looks good. I mean, how does it look in person?
Yeah, from a distance, it looked awesome. And it was a great attraction. People were walking by, they see this thing. Hey, what the heck is that? Because it actually looked like individual cables were glowing because of the trend, you know, individually sleeved wires. Well, this was individually glowing wires, but they really were just clipped on to the 24-pin extension. And the wires underneath were white, so they got lost within the light that was on top of that.
Well, I have to admit that the pictures looked stunning, and the implementation sounds like it's at least going to be affordable.
Yeah.
So something we might have to investigate for our crazy RGB build. And I have to admit, I hadn't expected that from Lan Li. You know, they make some of my very favorite cases, mm-hmm, and have a reputation for quality, but they haven't really dipped their toe into this arena very hard in any way before.
No, they haven't done power supplies before. I think they launching a line, but these were really just wires. So, and anybody can do wires. You don't have to have a specialization, sure, in power supplies to do just wires. So, and that's why I say it was more of a booth attraction than an actual real product. They might sell them, but it was something to draw people in to say, hey, here's some wires. Oh, and by the way, we have this awesome case over here that's all in tempered glass and pretty awesome.
Oh, I know. They are so amazing. Call me Lian Li.
Inwin does a similar thing, and we saw this at CES where they had that little orb case that would follow you around and stuff.
Yeah, that was cool.
Well, this year they had an actual art piece that people claim, you know, it depends on who you talk to. Inwin didn't even know how much it cost.
And that was stunning, and it got a lot of press too. And I'm starting to see a trend here. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Where things are stunning and get a lot of press, but aren't necessarily intended for the general public.
Exactly. My contact there at Inwin was saying that, you know, he couldn't quote me on a price because there was not a price. Some people were saying like $9,000. I kind of don't think so. But each one of the veins in this case was a cast aluminum part, and it was sand casted. And this is something that I did back in middle school, so I know a little something about casting aluminum.
Well, they're at least unique, right?
Yep, unique. And each one of them has to be hand done, so it takes a long time. And when I was at the Inwin factory a couple years ago, they don't have a sand casting machine there.
Oh, no.
So obviously this is an outsourced sort of deal. It was an amazing case. Completely unpractical, and they claimed that there was three of them that were already sold to some executives in China.
So there's always somebody looking for something unique. I get that.
Yeah.
I don't want to go too far away from RGB because...
Nope, we're getting back to RGB. Come on.
If RGB is the theme,
yep.
What, since I didn't get to go,
yep,
and I were looking at builds today, what would be the way? What's the infrastructure? What's the architecture I should be looking at getting into? What's going to last?
That is a good question. And the way that everybody has phrased RGB, it doesn't matter.
Oh, but it does. They're not all compatible.
Well, if you go to Corsair, for instance, they have their IQ system.
Okay.
And it's a software platform, and it's something that they've been working on for years where all of their components can talk to each other. Well, over the IQ system, they can have an RGB implementation that will react to whatever you set, individually addressable RGBs on their power supplies, on their memory, on their headsets, keyboards, stuff like that. But they also have a software overlay that will implement an API with a game. So for instance, with Far Cry 5, when you have the loading screen, all the lights across everything on IQ is red, white, and blue.
And I think that's slick. And we've seen that before with varying degrees of success.
Mm-hmm.
But does it feel like it's ready?
It feels like it's ready, assuming that you buy everything that's Corsair.
Oh, no.
So that is where that ecosystem is expanded across their entire product line. It's very smart for them. I don't think it's very smart for the market. If you go with Thermaltake, for instance, they have some amazing new ring fans that have three RGB zones. They have an outer ring that's on the top, and they have an outer ring that's on the bottom, and they have an inner ring at the hub.
Oh, man.
And each one of those is addressable individually. So you can have like this three-dimensional lighting going in back and forth across just the fan. That, to me, was amazing.
Yeah, and that sounds impressive. I have a lot of faith in the Ring fans. To me, they were the first affordable and dependable solution for lighting.
Mm-hmm.
Not always the best performing fans, though. Have they improved on that?
No, they still have the same implementation, but it's still PWM, and it's still through their controller, and it's still software controlled. But as we did for the Carrera case, you can modify that. We ripped out the actual fan controller and hooked it into an actual PWM signal, so it ran off the motherboard independent of the controller. So that way, the cooling of the radiator is handled by the system, not necessarily by the software. I think that's probably the smart way to do it, but it doesn't keep within their ecosystem. Now, Thermaltake, for instance, they are working on tying all of their products that are RGB enabled, including headphones, power supplies, fans, keyboards, mice, tables, cases, anyhow, all that stuff. But they're using the standard 4-pin headers, which is what they should be using. So for instance, if you buy a Thermaltake power supply and hook it into a system with an MSI motherboard, you can control the RGB on that power supply from the motherboard. They're not blocking you from that at all.
Yeah, good. Usually Thermaltake has a reputation for, I guess, polarizing folks, but that sounds really good for the end consumer.
Yeah, and that is the ecosystem that they're building that allows anybody to buy their products and then use the RGB in their particular system. Or you can have it all within the Thermaltake ecosystem and run it through their software, their RGB Plus or whatever they call it. And then you can individually address all the lights and you can do like sign sweeps across all of them or, you know, whatever you want for the most part.
Wow. Okay. So Thermaltake leading maybe some standardization there. We'll have to see where that goes.
Yeah. The last bit of RGB it started with a discussion with my contact at Gigabyte and how they were changing how RGB was handled on their motherboards.
Okay.
In the past, they went pretty much all in with RGB. So they had the memory sockets had RGB lights in them. The PCI Express slots had RGB lights in them. There was this little light bar in the upper right-hand corner of the motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
They had underlighting. Basically, the whole board was a big RGB sign. It was pretty crazy. They realized, which is something they should have done a long time ago, that once you install memory, you can't see the lights under the sockets.
Sure.
Once you install a video card, you can't see the lights under the PCI Express
slots. I'm following.
So now they've changed their tone to do tasteful RGB.
Tasteful. Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah, so the I.O. cover has RGB lights. Makes sense. You can see them. The MCP or the chipset in the VRM heatsinks have RGB lights. Hey, we got a car driving by. It's awesome. So these are the type of lights that you can see when your system is actually together. And it works within their ecosystem. And if you have the RS software installed and have like a headset and keyboard, you can get RGB light synchronization across the motherboard and those components. They are also adding RGB memory. So instead of having the lights in the sockets, you have the lights on the memory modules. You can plug those in.
Well, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. And of course, their video cards also have RGBs. And so instead of having them on the PCI Express slots, or sockets, I should say, they have them on the video card, which is where they should be. It's very tasteful. I'm going to say it's probably the best implementation I've seen in a while. But again, ASUS has also been kind of doing that too. So they're kind of following suit. And in a way, everybody has gotten smarter with the way they're doing RGB. And it just kind of took a couple of generations to get there.
Well, I expect there are a lot of people out there that are getting ready to move to the next generation and embrace RGB. But at the risk of spending an entire podcast talking about RGB, which is just crazy.
And which we've almost done.
It is crazy. Let's step back and talk about the really cool stuff that was at the show. Because you haven't talked about some of the stuff that I thought would be really exciting. And I know we all thought there would be maybe NVIDIA video card announcements. We hoped.
Yep,
but it's not a real surprise. Mm-mm. But there was a lot of talk about what I think was pretty cool, and that is the 40th anniversary Intel chipset, the i7-8086K. I really kind of expected this to be the story of the show, and it kind of fizzled out, and I think that's worth talking about.
So the 8086 basically was the processor that put Intel on the map 40 years ago.
Yeah.
My first computer had an 8088, dating myself.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Which was the cut-down version of the 8086. And if you read the article from the guy that created the processor, he said, yeah, it was a stopgap because we had other architectures that was better that we were trying to get off the ground. And lo and behold, it didn't work. But anyhow. So for the 40th anniversary, Intel decided to release a new processor, special edition. It runs at 5 gigahertz and built on the Coffee Lake architecture.
Oh, that sounds super cool. What's the catch?
Only one core runs at 5 gigahertz.
Well, hold on now. Wait a minute. So this is, they've had other anniversary editions before, and they've always had a catch, it seems like.
Yeah, well, the anniversary edition that was really hot before was basically a Pentium. Mm-hmm. So it was a dual core, no hyper-threading, and you could overclock the snot out of it, and it was cheap. But it was really nothing special.
Well, I'm starting to sense a trend here, but I want to bring it back. One core at 5 gigahertz.
Yeah, one core at 5 gigahertz.
So 5 gigahertz is fast, but how many cores are we talking about?
Six.
So 5 slow cores, one fast core. So what's the intended audience for this 40th anniversary processor? I'm a little confused.
It's going to sound bad, but the Intel fanboys?
Oh, no. So this is truly a nostalgia hit, collectible for the sake of collecting.
Yeah, basically. So, for instance, the Coffee Lake architecture, 6 cores. I forget the speed because I'm not going to quote it in the podcast. But in a sense, you could get this anniversary edition CPU by just overclocking core 0 and 1 to 5 gigahertz in the BIOS, and boom, you're done. You have an anniversary one. You've saved yourself $30.
And, wait a minute.
And you're good to go.
There's nothing else special about it? It doesn't have like cool packaging or gold PCBs or RGB? Oh, okay. I see where we're going here.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Yeah. When I visited with MSI, they said, hey, do you want to see the 8086K? I'm like, yeah, let's go see it. So they showed me, here's the machine. It's running 5 gigahertz. It's awesome.
Awesome.
So I took a picture of it, and in CPU-Z, they disabled all the other cores, so they had just one core with hyper-threading, run at 5 gigahertz, and he says, yeah, it's just one core. I'm like, is it a one-core CPU? And say, oh, no, it's a 6-core. But we locked out the other ones so that it would run at 5 gigahertz and show people that it ran that fast.
Okay, so I can see where, from a benchmarking team standpoint, that might have some attraction, however limited.
Yeah.
But as a home user who maybe wants one of these because it seems fast,
Actually, there might be a benefit there. Smidgen, though. Because, for instance, if you are surfing the web or checking email,
hardcore fast web surfing.
Yeah, it'll run at 5 gigahertz. It'll run faster. It'll get through the CPU system quicker. And you may not see a difference. So.
Okay, so you're paying a premium. You're getting the anniversary edition. It's really limited. And it's what chipset supports it, just to make sure we get the whole package down?
Oh, the X370?
370. So yeah. At least it's current. All right.
Current generation. It's good stuff.
That's it for Intel. I'm out. All right. But seriously, Intel, if the 40th anniversary processor is not doing it. Mm-hmm. What is the good processor news? Tell me, what did you see that was good?
Ooh, X399 gaming motherboards from both Gigabyte and MSI.
Now, hold on. That's an
Threadripper.
AMD Threadripper.
AMD Threadripper.
Now, we've joked a lot about Threadripper. It's one of the names that's kind of fun to talk about, like the Devil 13.
Oh, yes. Love the Devil 13.
But the Threadripper as a whole has been something that, as a scalable architecture, we've talked about the advantages, but as an enthusiast gamer processor, it hasn't really won us over. So what's changed?
Nothing, really. So so when Threadripper came out, AMD said, hey, this is a workstation CPU. It's not a consumer-level CPU. And the market treated it that way.
Right.
However, the enthusiasts, you know, people like me, although I didn't buy one, so I guess maybe not me. But yeah, the enthusiasts latched onto it saying, this is the king of processors. It's got 16 threads with their version of hyper-threading, and it's awesome.
And cheaper than the Intel premium processors.
Yes. More threads, cheaper. AMD has always been cheaper, though, right?
And it comes in a cool box.
It's a cool box, and the thing is a freaking monster. It's huge. Well, there wasn't a large support of motherboards for Threadripper.
But now
we have, for instance, I took pictures of a Gigabyte board, which is called the Extreme without an E.
Extreme!
S10 Extreme Threadripper Edition, something like that.
I like it.
Yeah. And then MSI had one, which they labeled Meg. And in my article, I said it's not related to Family Guy. But
Meg. Yeah. I didn't catch that. Yeah. But for the X399.
Yeah, X399. So the Meg Edition is supposed to be the MSI Enthusiast Gaming, and it sits above everything else. So it's kind of like a Halo.
M-A-G. I get it.
Yeah, so it sits above all of their other products. It's kind of the MSI Halo product, kind of like the Lightnings and stuff like that. The Gigabyte one that they showed me was also a Halo product that sits around where the UD9 would normally be.
Well, and that just really shows how shocking it is to me that they would put a Halo product out for the Threadripper, because that's totally not where I expected this to go.
Exactly. And the boards are built well. Like the MSI one had a VRM that I don't remember how many phases it had in it, but it took over the entire top of the motherboard.
Wow.
And that was designed because the new version of Threadripper, the one that's will be coming out soon, they're unlocking the other two core placements. So if you've ever seen what the Threadripper looks like without the lid on it, right, there's four individual CPU pads.
Like a Threadripper Black Edition.
Yeah.
Or something.
So two of them were enabled. The other two were blanks. And now they're populating the other two with CPUs, which is going to basically double the power requirement to run Threadripper. And that was the big thing. It's like it requires a lot of power to run. So you need to have this beefy, beefy VRM. Otherwise, it's going to
a beefy power supply. And we've joked for quite a while that the sweet spot's about 850. And there are processors up to, 2K, really.
Yeah. You're going to need, what was it? The Intel, the big one that's like $2,000. They say overclocked, that thing is going to draw a kilowatt of power.
Holy cow.
To run it. And that's an Intel CPU. Well, Threadripper is in that same vein.
Wow.
Same amount of threads. And now you're going to be adding another core to it.
We've talked about the scalability of Threadripper before. Is this an opportunity where you only need the processors you use, kind of like these EcoBoost engines that are coming out?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you're not necessarily drawing that much power unless you need it.
Exactly. And that's why the boards are overbuilt to handle that peak power demand, even though there's probably not going to be used all the time. Both MSI and Gigabyte are taking the opportunity to also add good VRM coolers. So we were talking thin fin with heat pipes and remote heat sinks. So it's actually a well-designed cooling system.
Sounds like they're finally taking Threadripper seriously, and maybe we should too.
Yeah, I'm on board. When the new one comes out, I will be not necessarily first in line, but one will be on the way to the lab, that's for sure.
I have to maybe call you out on something. You've only mentioned two motherboards, and they sound like good ones. I'm a little skeptical still about Threadripper.
Yeah.
You might have to win me over to a Threadripper build. But generally, when you come back from this trip, is a lot of motherboard eye candy that we see. Mm-hmm. And there hasn't been a lot of motherboard eye candy. What's the story?
The story is that there was no new boards aside from the X399s that were released. So everything else was already out in the market.
Okay.
And for instance, like when I went to go talk with AceRock, they said, so we don't have anything new in the consumer side of things. You wanted to see something exciting? I'm like, yeah, sure. So they took me around the corner to where all the mining stuff was.
Okay. So I wondered about that.
All of the new motherboards that were being released at Computex were designed for mining. So traditionally, what you have is a standard ATX motherboard, and people go and run these little 1X PCI Express ribbons off of it and have the video cards hanging across the top of the board.
Okay,
right?
Yeah, we've all seen pictures of some crazy builds.
Yep. So now what they are doing is creating an entire box, like a 4U box that's a little bit wider than a U, that has a motherboard that extends the entire width of the box or height of the box, whichever way you look at it.
Sure.
That has spots for video cards with, what is it? It's 6 PCI Express slots of space in between them. I think it's 6. Maybe it's 4. Anyhow, they're spaced out to the point where the board is big enough that you can plug in all of your video cards without risers and put them in a box that has good cooling.
Well, that's certainly a change from some of the Frankenstein boxes we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit, I wondered how the manufacturers would embrace the mining culture and whether they would at all.
Yeah, and it's huge. Every vendor had a mining system there. A lot of them were these long, really tall motherboards that were designed to be put into cases with good cooling. And in other cases, they were doing USB slots where the PCI Express stuff was.
Interesting.
That had every PCI Express lane from the CPU had a 1U or a 1X USB port for a video card. So it was just a maze, a grid, if you will, of USB ports on the motherboard for video cards to plug into.
Wow. Well, I guess I'm excited to see at least some divergence between the mining culture and the gaming culture, because specialization just makes sense. And mm-hmm. also, let's get the miners out of the gaming so that I can afford my stuff again.
Yeah, exactly.
And vice versa. I'm sure the miners would like their stuff to be affordable too. I'm not begrudging you guys. Send me a Bitcoin. But it's just a reality. I think that the divergence between these two is kind of like cars versus pickups, right? I mean, you need a machine that is designed for what the intent is and mm-hmm. not trying to make one machine do everything.
Yeah, and by putting them in a box, you can get better cooling. You don't have to run the fans at super high volumes with box fans going and blowing air across the top
sure.
of them. So it specializes it and actually, in a way, legitimizes mining or GPU sort of power. And, you know, when it's done, you can use it for a supercomputer, right?
No, I agree. And hopefully the mining culture will survive so those folks haven't invested for no good reason. And yeah. I do wish them well, the folks that have embraced it, I guess.
Yeah.
I have certainly friends that have repositioned their gaming machines as mining machines. And, yeah, some degree of success and some not. But there's certainly a little bit of a lottery mentality to it for me.
Yes.
All right. Well, we've talked about X399 is the surprise breakout, aside from RGB, but really I'm having trouble embracing it. So let's talk about overall. If we talk RGB, we take RGB out of the picture, we take 8086 sadly out of the picture, we talk no 399.
Yeah,
what if you could have any one product from the thing to build in from the show,
something that I saw that I
liked. What was number one? What's the top product? Because I feel like I haven't really felt that.
The top product. Okay, let me think. Saw a lot of good stuff. There was one product. There was one.
Okay, now I'm curious. He's got a look on his face. It's not good for radio, but it's mischievous.
Yeah, it's one product.
All right, share with me. It's got to be what? An RGB chair, right?
No.
Something radical.
It has RGB in it. So,
it's like the keyboard with the screen. Who makes that? That's
EVGA.
EVGA, right.
We saw that before. That wasn't
really
good. Nope. It was from Fantex, of all places.
Oh, Fantex. Halo lighting?
No.
New case. Oh, I got it. New case. Oh, I'm excited. All right.
It's the Evolve X.
Oh, it's got to be good if you're going to call it your top product. And
yeah.
Now, hold on. You have had Evolve cases before.
I have. I have several Evolve cases before, and I love them. I have the Evolve tempered glass edition, which was the first one that they did with tempered glass side panels.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, but the internet was all amiss going, oh my God, this case sucks. It looks great, but it just blows, or not blow, so to speak. So they all claimed, they being the internet.
Sure, popular opinion.
That the Evolve case does not cool. It has no venting. So if you put in an elaborate DIY sort of water cooling loop, it overheats the system.
And this is in the Evolve X.
No, this is in the Evolve.
No, this is, okay. So we're back to the original Evolve. So
yeah, I'm setting the stage here.
Okay. So before.
Before.
But we tested this case and we didn't think it was that bad.
No, I thought it was great. But I didn't put in like a crazy DIY loop with
four
video cards and some other crazy stuff.
Overkill maybe, but yeah. That's okay.
Other vendors like Mod My Mods, they go and offer custom panels that increases the cooling capacity of the Evolve and stuff like that. And then they released the tempered glass edition that had tempered glass side panels and an RGB controller. It's just kind of an evolution, right? Evolve. The Evolve X looks at everything that people complained about this case on the market and fixed it.
Wow, Fantex, I got to give you credit. You're paying attention. Evolve appropriate, I think.
Exactly. So the first thing that I noticed was that they increased the cooling. So the front panel, it's a bit skinnier on the sides so that more air can get through. And they spaced the panel further away from the fans to create an actual chamber under there. So that solved the intake problem, air into the system. The top, on the original Evolve, it just had these little tiny vents and they looked awesome. Well, the new one, it has actually ridge vents over the two corners that span the entire length.
But how does it look?
It looks great. You can hardly tell.
Nice.
Then they added, again, an RGB controller. So then they have over the PC, not the PC, but the PSU shroud. It's got a nice little RGB kind of trail going on. They have some lights in the front, so they will control light strips, which is pretty cool. The side panels are tempered glass, and they're on hinges.
I like the hinges.
So they slide back, so they kind of have the suicide door sort of look, which is pretty darn awesome.
Oh, that's cool, and they don't come off. Now, that's
well,
nice.
You can lift them off, but...
But they're not designed to come off. That's exactly. Even cooler.
It's awesome. And then, let's see, they allowed easier access to fans, so the top panel is easily removable to the point where you can install fans. So instead of sliding out the fan tray on the top, you just place them in the top. It's pretty awesome.
Nice.
What is the number one complaint that we had, or you had, with the Carrera case when you were running cables?
Oh, geez, man. It was just a pain in the butt. There weren't enough locations for it, not enough space.
Well, yeah, there's not a lot of space, and you can see them.
Oh, because of the back panel, yeah.
The back panel's glass.
Uh-huh.
With the Evolve X, they now have these panels that swing away and will cover all the cables.
No way. Seriously? Like a cable shroud? Is that what we're talking about?
Yep, cable shroud. On the cable channel, right behind where the hard drives are, and at the bottom where the PSU shroud is.
That's very cool. I don't think we've seen that before.
No, that's the first time ever. And they redid the 3.5-inch drive bays, so now it supports seven 3.5-inch drives.
Nice.
Guess how many SSDs?
Oh, my gosh. Let me see. We've seen 3, 4. I'm guessing 4.
No.
All right.
More.
More than 4?
More than 4.
Okay. How many more is practical? Like 8?
Oh, think not necessarily practicality.
Like
more than 8.
Are you kidding? More than... Oh, now you got to tell me.
It's 9.
Wow.
Supports 9 SSDs. And all because of those shrouds that cover the cable. So you mount the SSDs to those panels and also to the back of the motherboard tray.
9. What kind of crazy RAID SSD system could you put in that? That's kind of cool.
Well, the thing is, it's 9 SSDs plus 7 drives.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a drive monster. You're not going to be able to pick the thing up, which is crazy. Mm. They had a demo in their suite that had 2 systems in it. At the top, you can slide the panel out and put in a mini ITX motherboard, so to speak.
Now, we've seen that before, though.
I have seen that before, and it also supports the full ATX motherboard. Oh, this is the other thing. It supports the extended ATX form factor now.
Oh, wow. Okay, full size.
I can put in my X299 Dark now, which is pretty crazy. So, it supports the standard ATX motherboard plus the mini ITX motherboard in the same system, And if you're running the Fantex power supply, you can power both systems at the same time. And their build had one video card in a vertical situation because it supports vertical GPUs now.
Why not?
And on the ATX motherboard had two video cards in SLI.
Now that sounds really crazy. However, I noticed that you haven't mentioned anything about the price point. So do we know how expensive this beast is going to be? Are we talking master case? Are we talking custom Leanly? I mean, where are we headed with this thing? Do you have any idea?
You know me. I never ask about price. You know, if you have to ask about price, it's too, you can't afford it to begin with, right?
Fair enough.
They claimed that it's going to be replacing the Evolve that's currently in the market.
Which is very competitive.
I have a feeling that it's not going to be any more or less expensive than the current case out there.
Wow, definitely one to watch. I can see why you're excited about this. Mm-hmm. And I'm sensing a build in the future. Now, I can't help but feel like Evolve X, Evo X, maybe it's time to focus on an Evo build.
Yep. That's ironically, the summer build was going to be building in my Evolve Temper Glass that I have, and I was going to mod in a vertical GPU, mod in extra cooling, and I'm like, I'm just going to wait until it comes out.
Or you could just get the one that has all that.
Yep.
Why not a dual system, perhaps?
Oh, no. I would love to do a dual system, but I can't justify it. The enthusiast in me says yes. Practicality says no.
Well, I have to admit that I'm not quite at the point where I feel like I need two systems in one machine. But I know a lot of people are podcasters, Twitchers, those kinds of folks.
Oh, yeah, Twitch.
Easy. Oh, man, you're going to eat this stuff up. And Fantex really stepping up. I'm impressed. Mm-hmm. It's top product from the scene.
Love it.
So let's recap. This year was all about RGB.
It was RGB, yes.
This year was not about Intel's 40th anniversary processor.
It was not.
Disappointed, I know, because mm-hmm. suddenly I have to start looking at a Threadripper build.
Yes, you're going to have to.
And I might have to do that Threadripper build in an Evolve X.
Yes, you will.
So overall, how was the trip?
The trip is always good. I can never complain about the trip. What I can complain about is that Computex is not the way that it used to be. It used to be an event. You would go to Computex, you would get the new releases, you would see the new products that were out on display, and it became a media playground. So you could write about anything, and you could have as many media from around the world, and nobody would really write the same story because everybody wouldn't see the exact same thing. Nowadays, Computex is not this launch pad anymore, and the booths have actually kind of changed to more brand recognition and not necessarily about launching new products. I don't really like that as much. And a lot of the media have kind of latched onto that. I was one of two or three people from the U.S. that weren't tech YouTubers at Computex. It made it really kind of boring going to the after parties and not knowing anybody. I used to be kind of this celebrity. Everybody come around to say hi and stuff. But now it's like...
The old timer on the scene, right?
Yeah, I know. Well, now you got like some of the young guys. And the tech tubers don't actually go to after parties. I guess they're too busy doing something else. The media folks are all from Europe for the most part, which is kind of crazy. So the Europeans are still coming over to Computex, but not the US people, which is kind of crazy. So from that standpoint, not so great. It's still 100% relative to what we do at Hardware Asylum. Unfortunately, the overclocking has kind of slid off the map. Mining has kind of taken its place. Gaming is still there. I like to see the innovation that's coming out. And despite the fact that RGB is everywhere, it's not necessarily an overload unless you're looking for an overload. For the regular consumer, it's like, oh, hey, it's got lights. Great. You know, but for us, since we see everything with RGB, RGB this, RGB that, RGB headphones, oh my gosh, what the heck? It seems like an overload for us, but for the regular consumer, it's not that big of a deal.
Well, I have to admit that this has been a little bit different from our regular recap, and I hope you've enjoyed sitting back and chatting with us about some of the themes and things that we saw at this particular endeavor. But mm-hmm. if we've missed something, definitely drop us a note and let us know. And in the future, more to come on Computex and the Evolve X. Thanks for joining.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS, follow us on Twitter, or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2018. Thanks for listening.
German precision engineering. How come Germans don't make any computer parts? They would last forever.
They do.
What do they make? What's a German manufacturer?
Be Quiet is a German manufacturer.
And it's a good one.
And it is a good
one. What else you got? That's a pretty short list.
It is a very short list. That's all I got.